Shukorach to Ron and to everyone who finished the Masechta. Bezras Hashem, we are starting Masechas Beitza. When's the first day? Shmini Atzeres. We'll be starting with that. Maybe we'll do a Shir and Shul. Maybe we'll start with something. Okay, Bezras Hashem, we'll be starting Masechas Beitza, and we are timing it in such a way where, first of all, in Shmini Atzeres Simchas Torah, we're starting a new limud, which is always appropriate for Shmini Atzeres and Simchas Torah. But we're also timing it in such a way where we plan on completing Maseches Beitza, right, as it work out, about 60 days before Purim, which will give us the opportunity to then learn Maseches Megillah in time for Purim, which obviously would be something that's very appropriate. And yashar koach to everyone who learned, and a special yashar koach to Dr. Frogel for all that he does to ensure that everybody does learn these Masechtos. I want to also thank the Schlafrock family for sponsoring the refreshments tonight and for arranging for everything. And all those who helped set up, I apologize for the last minute change of location. That was my call. It may have turned out to be the wrong call, but that was my call based on the inclement weather that we were having earlier today. Because we are on a tight schedule and all of our Rabbanim that are here are very busy people, we're going to try to keep the introductions very short to non-existent. The program is going to be about 15-20 minutes. Each Rav is going to deliver a shir. We'll have a few minutes of breathing in between, and in between each shir, it's going to be Rabbi Trump, followed by Rabbi Rice, followed by Rabbi Schechter. So I'm just going to give just one very broad, very brief introduction to all three of the Rabbanim that we invited to speak here this evening. When we were thinking, and this was already many months ago, we were thinking about this program and what we would be angling for, what we would be looking for. So we're trying to create a sense in general in our shul ever since its inception. What we've been trying to do is create a certain energy around Talmud Torah, a certain excitement for Talmud Torah, and we've been and we thought it would be most appropriate at around the time of Simchas Torah, and certainly on Tikkun El Hashanah Rabbah, to bring those who have been able to energize people in Talmud Torah. I grew up in the Five Towns. Many of you may have also, or may have at least known about it. In recent years, the entire face of the Five Towns has changed for the better, has been energized in serious Talmud Torah, and it's largely due to the three Rabbanim that we have with us here this evening. Rabbi Trump, Rabbi Rice, and Rabbi Schechter have done, in their own parts of the broader community, have done incredible work in not just being good speakers, which they're all excellent speakers, and not just being good rabbis, and they're all excellent rabbis, but really highlighting the importance of Talmud Torah and inspiring people toward higher levels of Talmud Torah. And that is to me at least, the greatest sign of success of a Manag Yisrael. We originally thought we would call it like the future stars or the young stars of the community. They're more than future stars, they're the current stars of our community, and it's a great kavod for us to have each of them with us this evening. I asked them mechila for not doing an individualized introduction to each of them, but they come from the same place I come from. We don't like this kind of thing. So without further ado, I ask Rabbi Trump to share Divrei Torah with us.
I was going to send out some soul sheets. We're not going to necessarily use them, but just for reference, there's actually a few less on the side. Just for reference, if it would be helpful afterwards, we will take it from there. Let me just... It's a great pleasure to be in the shul, to be speaking next to an esteemed colleague, Rabbi Rice, Mr. Shamsun Ra Shechta. This shul has a shame in the community of being a place which is a serious makom Torah. And it's a tremendous privilege to be learning with you, especially on this very important night where the learning counts so much. It's wonderful to see the familiar faces, and hopefully looking forward to getting to meet some of the less familiar faces over the due course. So let's start. Tonight is a very important night. Let's try to understand what's going on over here. You see, what happens is, the problem is that when we go back in history, we try to understand What's going on Rosh Hashanah Rabbah? What is going on Rosh Hashanah Rabbah? We get two different, very different answers. You see, if we go back to the good times of the Gemara, we're going to get one answer. We go back into Divrei Kabbalah, we get a very different answer. The question is how do we understand what's going on tonight? How do we understand what's going on tomorrow? The Shulchan Aruch tells us that in fact, when it comes to Rosh Hashanah Rabbah, we actually use the Nigunim of Yom Kippur. Right, we're going to the Shatz is going to be wearing a kittel. We're going to be using Nusach Yom Kippur. This is some form of Yom Adin. When you look back in the Gemara, we don't see any of that. The Gemara talks about very simply the uniqueness of this day. Perhaps is to be found in an interesting practice, a practice which is kind of a carryover for us, and that is that tomorrow, aside for the regular Arba Minim, as you saw just downstairs, as you're walking upstairs on the left. We're already selling Hoshanas of Arava. Where did that arrive from? The Mishnah tells us, the Mishnah towards the end of Masechet Sukkah tells us that there was Lulav and there was Arava. There was Arava which was in the Arba Minim, but then there was also another practice of this Arava. What was this practice? So the Gemara tells us, and Sukkah goes into detail, that there was a place called Moitza, still is today, when you're driving to Yerushalayim. As you're going up, there's a dip. When you go, just as you pass Mevaseret, as you go down, there's a place called Beit Zayit and Motza. It's on either side, very interesting place, lots of archaeological remains there, very fascinating. That's where they would go down to from Yerushalayim, and they would bring the willows up, and every day they would take the willows and they would bring them to the Mizbeach. Now they would put them on the Mizbeach. These were not the Arovas we're talking about today. They'd be 11 amos long from the top to the bottom, you know, the weeping willow all the way down. They would take them and they would put them so that their heads would be leaning over the top of the Mizbeach. And they would do this all 7 days. If it was Shabbos fell out on any regular day, they would stop doing it, except if Shabbos fell on the last day. We don't have that permutation in our calendar. Our calendar, we will never have Hoshana Rabbah on the Shabbos. But in those days, Hoshana Rabbah could fall on the Shabbos. If it fell on the Shabbos, they would still get the Aravas and put them on Mizbeach on Shabbos. Something special about Arava on Shabbos. In fact, the Rambam says, because Hoshana Rabbah was so special regarding the Arava, that's why what we do today is actually in memory of that. Meaning when it comes to the Lulav, we know that originally we used to only shake Lulav on day one. That was all we had. When the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Reb Yochanan ben Zakkai, who lived at the times of the destruction, realized we're going to lose it. So he said, we're going to make a tikkun like they did in the Beis HaMikdash called Shiva. That's why we did all 7 days. What happened to the Arava? Arava was also there. There's a debate whether they actually walked around the Mizbeach as well with the Arava, or was the Lulav. What happened to the Arava? Says the Rambam. Because it was actually Halacha L'Moshe Mi'Sinai. It wasn't Mi'ikr Din Torah, so the remains, the echo of what we have today, is the Arava we take tomorrow. When? On which day? The day that would even supersede Shabbos. Is we take the Arava and we hit it on the ground. That's the most exciting part for everybody's waiting for that moment. And then we take it and we put it either on the Sukkah or on the Aron. That's kind of the remains of the day. And that's basically, very much, if you go through what we call Nigleh, Shas, you don't find too much about Hoshana Rabbah, really. It happens to be the seventh day of Sukkot, like there's a seventh day of Pesach. Seventh day of Pesach is a Yom Tov. Seventh day of Sukkot is the end of Chol HaMoed. That's all it really is. And we kind of end there. Problem is that if you dig a little deeper into history, you find some other very terrifying notions of what Hoshana Rabbah is. An example, Zohar HaKadosh, Parshas Tzav. Here's the Zohar. The Zohar talks about, let's see where to start from. Says begin the second line. He says begin the dam vorech lekol shasa biyom shviyasa dechag hu siyuma de dinar de alma upiskin nafkin mi by malko. So the Zohar says that on the seventh day of Sukkot, lo and behold, it is a day where all the piskin, all the psakdins are now being issued from the celestial courthouse. All that's what we say piskatova. Good kvitzel, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about today, tonight. This is the time it's happening, says the Zohar and Sav. That, and because of that, it's such time, piskinovkim bay bay malkov, guvrin misari, umisaimim vahay yuma, and the Zohar talks about the terrifying details of this day, of Yom Hadin, of Rosh Hashanah Rabbah. And you kind of wonder to yourself, really? We don't hear, meaning, okay, the Rabbah is one thing, but that's all we really have. What's happening? Moreover, there's actually a very fascinating halacha. I was hesitating whether to mention this halacha tonight, but then it's overcast, so it's all right to mention this halacha. Why? The Ramah quotes a very fascinating halacha. The Ramah says, about tonight, that there's a halacha that a person, it's a siman, that if a person is walking outside and doesn't see their shadow to the light of the moon, it's a bad siman. And then the Ramah concludes, don't do that. Right? Because we don't know, we're not 100% sure, we can't really be 100% sure, we know exactly what's going on, so don't do it, it's good. Masrei Mazlei, you're gonna, in the end of the day, you start thinking, we don't know about those things, we shouldn't be looking, speculating, worrying. And besides, in the city, you can't even see shadows anyway because we don't have moons and we don't have that are bright enough with our street lamps. Nonetheless, Tomim Tiyeh, so on. Where did the Ramah get that from? The Ramah got it from the most odd of places. If you take a look, actually, interestingly enough, in Parshas Shlach Lecha, of all places, the Torah is describing how they're trying to encourage Bnei Yisrael to enter the land, and in one of the descriptions they have about the inhabitants is Sar Tzilom Me'aleihem. Their shadows disappeared. Okay? What does that mean? So the Ramban says, okay, they were scared, they were running so fast, maybe it's a description, it's a metaphor of their weakness. But then the Ramban says a terrifying thing, and this is the basis of the Ramah. Take a look in Source 5. So while Yitachin, it's possible, Shiyirmo Zakosov, the Masha Noida, that which is known, Ramban is living about 800 years ago. So 800 years ago, says the Ramban, there's a known fact. Kibalel hachoisem lo yetzel rosh ha'ish asher yomus b'shonahu hahi. That it's known that on the night of the sealing, what's the sealing? Coming back to the Zohar, piskin yotzim bei alma, bimei bei malka. The night of the chosum, the night of the sealing, there's no shadows on the person of a dead man walking. Terrifying. Lochach yomar kvar sar tzilo me'aleihem. What's the pasuk saying? They lost their shadows. They're dead people walking. Don't worry about them. That's what the pasuk is saying. You know, Peter Pan must have gone from somewhere. You have to think about it, right? You know, he lived for many years after that. But there's like, you know, there's an interesting twist there in this Ramban. Shenigzar aleihem misa. Hashem itano ki yashoichem bekribenu v'oisavon anisim in los anei kol roya al kain al tiraum. That's why you shouldn't fear them because they ultimately are dead people. Fantastic. So Ramban says, based on, essentially, he's talking about a known fact, right? This known fact must have been originally the Zohar. And the idea is that we don't see shadows on that night. Unbelievable. And again, we have to ask ourselves, you know, it's almost like if we just sort of split these in two, we could be talking about two separate days altogether. There's the day that we say the Hoshanas are specifically important, that we have the remaining minhag to bring the Aravos to the Mizbeach, and today we beat the Aravos, which also is a very strange minhag we have to try to address in a moment. And then you go into the Nistar, and the Nistar has got a whole different world. You know, this is a gentle way of asking it. The way the academics ask it is they say, well, you see, the Zohar came along, and the Zohar suddenly, boom, out of the blue, the Zohar suddenly invents this new holiday, which nobody knew about. Clearly an invention of, you know, Moses de Leon, who revealed the Zohar, and you see over here, this is an example of, you know, different traditions and newfangled introductions into Jewish thought. That's another way that people ask, or rather, Rosh Mahu Omer. It's not really a question sometimes, it's just a statement about the academic background of the Zohar. Nonetheless, I think the Ramban is a bar hachi, that we can certainly rely on the fact that when the Ramban talks about this, he's not sniggering and he's not laughing when he's talking about this. So let's try to understand this Med La'alocha into Shulchan Aruch. So let's try to understand how this works. So the first clue we should have as to maybe if the Nigla itself talks about this is the fact that the Nigla may talk about this. There is a time where the Torah talks about a Yom Din which is around now. And that is that although we just passed Rosh Hashanah, which is a Yom Din, we know that the Mishnah says that in fact there were four prakim, but that there were times when the world is judged. We'll call it departmental budgets, meaning there's the general budget, all of living creatures, and then we got the mayim, the peros ha'ilon, right? So the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah Tes Zayin says, "Barav prakim ha'olam nidah ba'pesach al atua ba'tzeres al peros ha'ilon b'Rosh Hashanah kol bo'el ma'ruv l'nef givinei moron." Skipping to the last line, "Uvachag nidah ne'mal ha'mayim." We know that on Chag, on Sukkos, we're judged on the water, which means to say, if we do the math, that means that when is the judgment ending? At the end of Sukkos. When's the end of Sukkos? Today. Today's the last day of Sukkos in the end of the day, right? We're entering Shmini Atzer. Shmini Atzer is a Chag Bifnei Atzmo. It's interesting that we are Shoel Geshomim when? On Shmini Atzer, after Sukkos is finished, after the dinner is already Nechtach. Isn't that interesting? So already, it's interesting to see, although we perhaps don't do the calculations, there is some type of din. There is some double din we're carrying over from this halacha. Apparently, it's the end of the stem. But the degree that the Zohar is talking about sounds like it's actually not just the water, it sounds like it's connected further back. So how do we understand that? So fascinating halacha. There's an unknown Emes Liakov, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, who appears in Parashas Emor, when you hear this, it's a hidden treasure. Once you hear this, you can't unhear this. It's one of the most unbelievable pieces he's asked. He's asked by Rav Kamen Epstein, who was the Rosh Yeshiva Shar HaTorah. And he said, what's this business? The Zohar talks about there's this new Yom Hadin Hoshana Rabbah. We've never heard of it. How does it work out? And by the way, just if you take a look, I actually included this Emes Liakov over here, and the source is just worthwhile to look over. The Emes Liakov says in the second middle column, he says in the brackets at the end of the paragraph, Higashti beKushya zu Kushya shall kantur kenega divrei Zohar. You know, even in the rational, we'll call it Yud Gimel Ikarim camp, there are people who, you know, a little circumspect about the Zohar. So he said, I hear Gashti a little bit of that in the question. So nonetheless, what's pshat? So the Emes Liakov says an unbelievable thing. He takes a halachic model. The Gemara, the Mishnah in Shabbos tells us that Hillel and Shammai made a takana about that on Shabbos you can't read Le'or HaNer. Le'or HaNer does not mean the lights we're talking about now. We're talking about the lights in those days. The lights in those days was that the candle had oil. It was a wick at the one end. So what would happen is you can't do Gzeira Shemayate. What's going to happen? You're busy reading your, I'm not going to say what, you know, the times of the times, whatever it was, in the days when it was still alright, and you might come to tip it, to get just a little more light, because we're flickering, the flames are really not good. And so Gzeira Shemayate, Hillel and Shammai Masakin, not to read L'or HaNer. So now, here's just a basic question you'd ask whenever you have these takonas. Like, you know, what happened beforehand? And what happened afterwards? Meaning, Let's send out a survey at the time. And like we'll send out an anonymous survey to all the folks living in the vicinity of Hillel and Shammai. Hillel and Shammai were the last of the Zugois, under the jurisdictions of the Zugois, entering into the time of Tanaim. Right, second temple, towards the end of the temple. Great. So now we'll send out a survey and say, okay, so how many of you are reading on Shabbos? We'll make an anonymous survey. Nobody's going to be embarrassed. Then, how many of you read on Shabbos? Great. How many of you read L'or HaNer on Shabbos? How many of you read on L'or HaNer and tip it? You can tell us. We just want to know for the purposes of future gezeros. What happens? If there were enough people beforehand who were tipping the candles, then it should have been Shammai Avtalion a few generations beforehand in the Zugois. If it wasn't happening, then why were they Machmir now? What changed? It says Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, an unbelievable idea. And that is the following. What changed was very simple. There's a halacha that L'or HaNer on Yom Kippur, you can read L'or HaNer on Yom Kippur. Why? Yom Kippur, even if Yom Kippur falls on Shabbos. So the Gemara says because on Yom Kippur there's just a little bit extra mirsas. There's just a little bit extra fear in the air that people are going to be extra careful. That doesn't translate psychologically, subconsciously onto a regular Shabbos. What happened was, is that Hillel and Shammai living in a generation where the mirsas level, the fear level on Shabbos dropped just below the bar, and they realized that people were starting to become a little less insensitive, a little less sensitive, they're becoming a little more callous towards Shabbos. It was at their generation they realized that people's sensitivities had dropped, they needed to introduce it specifically then. They understood, they could feel the pulse of the generation. That's what needed to happen. Says Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, beforehand, of course there was a Yom Din, all times on Hoshana Rabbah, but you know what the problem is? People were terrified. If you tell people, you know what, the psak is Yotze Mibayik Malko, there's going to be a time where the psak is coming out of the king's palace on Hoshana Rabbah, nobody's going to be able to would have been able to celebrate Chag HaSukkos. They would be in terror. This is the end of our judgment. We can't experience Sukkos as it should be Zman Simchoseinu. Why? Because their calibrated scale was such that they would be in terror of the Yom HaDin. And therefore, in balancing out Simchas Yom Tov, they hid it. Then it remained that only a few people, the Chassidim and Shemaisa, those people could be juggling the Simchas Vesa Shoeva and still be happy, could be the ones to know. It was released to the public. So he says in the 5000th year, which is common era, anybody know? 1240. Okay, so that's the 5000th year, which is just before the publishing of the Zohar. Interestingly enough, there's when it was revealed a lot of these secrets. This is very helpful, by the way, for Lag BaOmer as well. This is sort of Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. It was made public to the world at a time that we needed it. at a time where, unfortunately, we don't fear as much as Yom HaDin. We could experience the Yom HaDin at the same time as Zman Simchoseinu. That's why the two tracks actually exist. One inwardly, one outwardly. One concluding thought, and with that we'll end this evening. And that is coming back to the Arava for a moment. You notice that in the Bizman HaMikdash, the expression of the day would be through Arava, even on Shabbos, and it would be put on Al-Gabi HaMizbeach. Today, we also have, as the Rambam says, the carryover of the Arava, but what do we do with it? We beat it. We beat it on a kli, we beat it on the ground, we put it on the Aron HaKodesh, we put it outside. Says Rav, the Emunah Seitech, Rav Wolfson, says, because ultimately speaking, this is the end of the judgment of Bnei Yisrael, we now live in a period of Golus. And Arava, which is the greatest common denominator for all Jews, the item which has no taste, no smell, the basic Jew, which we all ultimately are at some level, we take that and we beat it to the ground. We say to ourselves, look how empty we are, Hashem. Look how we come before you. Look how little we have. You know, when you read the newspaper and you see UNESCO saying what it says, you know, you don't know if you want to cry or laugh. You know, and there's no response. You know, Italy trying, you know, to put themselves out there. But ultimately, folks, have we reached a level where Jewish history is so meaningless to the world that you can have a UN resolution and nobody even sneezes? That what happens over here is you take the Arava, you say, look at this. Centuries and millennia of being killed, of being persecuted, and now they deny everything that happened. Look, Hashem, look how low we are. But you know what? Says the Munas Itecho, says Rav Wolfson, we take that in Ma'ash Bois Yorim Evyon. You take that on our final judgment day, we say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we've put our lowly state back on your Aron HaKodesh, because that's where we know we are. Even with nothing, without the leaves, without the time, without the Reach, we've come so far that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we should be Zoichem. That when those Piskim are Yotzi Mi Baal Malka, Metzah Hashem, we should be Zoichem, because you know where we really truly belong. Even if we feel extremely far from Him. Metz Hashem, it should be for all of us, communally and individually. It should be really as the Piskin Yotzin Mivei Malka. It should be good psakim for all of us. Call Amoy Beis Yisrael.
We'll continue with the program now. If you haven't seen Rav Mordechai Willig at any point, just let me know. I mean, you're sitting closest to the door. You don't have to stand outside. But he had apparently come at some point. So okay. So without further ado, again, as I promised, no introductions. Rabbi Isaac Rice Shlita.
Good evening, everyone. It is a pleasure and an honor to speak in front of the familiar faces and colleagues and other Rabbanim and people from the past, people from the present, and perhaps people who I'll get to know in the future as well. I recently read in a two-volume published biography of Rav Elyashiv a beautiful statement that Rav Elyashiv made. Rav Elyashiv noted that in the last parshas of the Torah, in parshas Vayelech and parshas Hazinu, we find again and again that the Torah is referred to as a Shira, the song of the Torah. And it's a very beautiful idea that Torah has beauty like a song. But ask Rav Elyashiv, what is it specifically about a song when it comes to the teaching of Torah and the learning of Torah that all of us need to know? And Rav Elyashiv explained in a most fascinating and penetrating way. He said that when we hear or we see comments or we see advertisements for lectures on different topics, some of them very specific topics, some of them very broad topics, in all of these cases, not all of the lectures appear to everyone. sometimes 17th century Italian art doesn't appear to me. And other times, fascinating discussions about the Higgs boson also doesn't appear to me. But to some people, it is very fascinating. And to some people, lectures and these types of talks in their realm and what's familiar to them is very interesting. But said Rav Yashiv, when we hear something about music, when there's going to be singing and there's going to be a concert and there's going to be song, everyone likes music. No matter what is going on, everyone can appreciate a song. Everyone can appreciate a good piece of music, whether you're young, you're old, whether you like from a certain era, a certain period, everyone can relate to Shira. And therefore, Rav Yashiv said, when it comes to teaching Torah, and when it comes to spreading Torah, it is the responsibility of the teacher of Torah to present the Torah in a manner of a Shira, in a way that everyone in the room can relate to it, everyone in the room can understand and feel a part of that song. It shouldn't be like a lecture, it shouldn't be like a talk, it should be like a shira, something that can touch every single person in the room in some way. And you certainly have a Rav that I do not need to go on and on about, who has the ability to turn Torah into a shira. But in light of this comment of Rav Yashiv, I want to pick up on the idea of a shira. Anyone who likes music or experiences music in a penetrating way understands that if you like a piece of music, you can listen to it again and again and again, until it creates, essentially, a worm that buries into your head. And psychologists discuss this idea about how to get a tune out of your head and how a tune gets into your head. And this is the idea of a song. When you hear a good piece of music that touches you, it's in your brain again and again and again. And with this in mind, we can turn to the general concept, but I want to point to something more specific within the topic of chazara, of review of Talmud Torah. We are all familiar, have heard in some point, the famous Gemara in Chagiga and Daf Tes that says, Eino Dome, there is nothing compared to a person who learns his Gemara, learns his reviews, his Torah 101 times, versus the person who learns it only 100 times. Each additional review of Torah that you're already familiar with, something that you already have deep in your heart, deep inside of you, one more chazara, one more listening, one more review. There's a story told about the Vilna Gaon, that the Vilna Gaon once met a young boy he went to cheder with. And the young boy turns into a fantastic rav of the community, very talented guy, but he wasn't the Vilna Gaon. He was good, but he wasn't on the level of Rabbeinu Eliyahu Mivilna. And the young rabbi now turned to his colleague, the Vilna Gaon, and said, what happened? How did you become such an incredible person? How did you get to the level to know this much Torah? So the Vilna Gaon looked at his former classmate and turned to him and said, do you know the Gemara in Chagiga and Daf Tes that says nothing is comparable to reviewing or learning 101 times? So he said, yeah. He said, did you believe that Gemara? You think it's true? So he said, of course I did. Emunas Chacham, Emunin Chazal. Of course I believe in the Gemara. So the Grud looked at him and said, well, I didn't. I didn't believe that Gemara at all. So you know what I did? I tried it out. And I learned it 101 times. That's how you get to the level where your Torah is in your heart, and you try and you persevere. Said the Gra, I didn't believe the Gemara, and therefore it was my responsibility to figure out and try to get there to the best that I could. Says the Pasuk in Mishlei, Masir ozno mishmoa Torah gam tfilaso toeva. A person who closes his ear from Torah, this person who says, I don't want to listen to this Torah, so gam tfilaso toeva. His davening is an abomination, and it is disgusting. Ask the Vilna Gaon, this is brought in Mipinim, Mishulchan Hagra by Rav Eliach. He says, what do you mean, Masir Ozno? He turns his ear away from Torah. It should say, Masir Peh. He turns his mouth away from Torah. He stopped learning Torah. He stopped mouthing and repeating the words of Torah. Why does it say he turned his ear away from Torah? Explains the Vilna Gaon, that it is normal and unfortunate that people will come to a shir. People will hear the rabbi saying something between Mincha Mariv. People will hear a shir or an advertisement for a shir about an idea they know, or someone speaking about a topic, or it's the same Shnai Mikra, or the same Mishnayis, and what happens in their brain? They turn off. I know this already. I've heard this topic before. I've already reviewed this. There's no need for me to go into this. Says the Gra, Masir Ozno, a person who turns his ear away and says, I don't need to listen. I got this already. I'm good. I've mastered all of Hilchos Shabbos. It's in my pocket. No need to review. Says the Gra, such a person is not going to grow in Limud HaTorah. when you hear a Dvar Torah, and in your mind you say, I already know that, I don't need to listen, done, I checked out, no need for me to pay attention. So says the Gra, how do you expect to grow in any way? How do you expect to have any accomplishment in Liman HaTorah when you've decided that it's not interesting to me anymore because I already know this? Know what the response is, says the Gra? Your tefillah is going to be toyeva. Your tefillah is going to be disgusting. Because how many times a day do we daven? 3 times a day. How many times a day do we say the same exact Shmoneh Esrei with the same words and the same brachos? 3 times a day. 7 days a week, 365 days a year. What do you think is going to happen to your davening? If your approach to Liman HaTorah is, I already know that, I don't need to review, it's not interesting anymore. So what's going to happen to your tefillos? Your tefillos are going to turn into toeva, a disgusting thing that's going to be disgusting to you because it's not going to be interesting to you. This is a well-known vort from the Vilna Gaon. Says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Bnei Yisrael, Im Shamoa Tishma L'Kol Hashem Lokacha. If you will surely listen to the voice of HaKadosh Baruch Hu after the events at Mara. Says the Gra, this is what the Gemara means in Brachos and Daf Mem. Shamoa, if you learn it the first time, Tishmoa, you'll get it again. You'll hear new things, you'll see Chidushim, you'll grow. Each additional review of the concept you know will improve and get better and will make you into a better Jew. Now this vort that we just said from the Vilna Gaon is often ascribed to the Vilna Gaon, but it becomes way before the Vilna Gaon, and I'll show it goes back to the Midrashim of the Tanaim and the Amoraim. 400 years before the Gra writes the Tashbetz in Chelek Dal and the Chodem Hasholosh and Tur Rishon and Simon Membeis, the same vort that the Gra said over. There are people who think they don't need to go to a shir because they already learned that or they know about this topic. They don't need to review the daf again. I did Shnai Mikra for 10 years already. What's the 11th year going to accomplish? And therefore, he says to them the same vort as it says in the Mishnah. If you're Meisir Ozno, if you turn your ear away from Torah and say, I already got this, I already know this, you're not going to grow. Nothing's going to come of your Torah. Says the Devarim Rabbah in Perek Dalid, Shimu l'divrei Torah v'al tagbias aznecha mishmo divrei Torah. Ki Hashem diber. Hashem's talking to you. If Hashem wants to talk to you 10 times, and 15 times, and 20 times, or 1,000 times, Hashem is talking to you through divrei Torah. You're not going to listen? You're not going to pick up your ear and pay attention? Of course you are. This is what Hashem wants us to do, to listen again and again and again. And then says the Tashbetz, differently than the Gra. What does it mean in the end of the Pasuk that your tefillah is going to be a toeva? Tefillah is not going to be disgusting in your eyes. It's going to be disgusting in Hashem's eyes. If you say to Hashem that your Torah, Hashem, I've got it already, I've heard it, I don't need to review, I can check out when so-and-so or the rabbi is saying the same Dvar Torah again. If you say that, what's Hashem going to say? Maybe I'm tired of your davening. I've heard it a lot already. What, you started davening when you were 10, 13? You've been doing it for now 20, 30, 40, 50 years? I'm a little tired of it, guys. Same thing day in, day out. If you're tired of my Torah, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, maybe I'm tired of your davening. Maybe I'm not too interested anymore. So says the Tashbetz, Mida Kenegan Mida. If you treat Hashem's Torah as something that I don't need to review again or hear again, so Hashem's going to treat your davening in the same exact way. But as we said before, we can go back further than the Tashbetz. Write the Yalchut Shimoni in Mishlei and Remez Tuf Kuf Lamed Zayin. Shlo Tomru Eshtaked Shimuna Osa. Don't say, I already heard this. Shne Amar Al Tibos Kizikna Aymecha. Vimrasem Kach Afani Yochol Lomar Lachem. Lama Tem Korim Et Shema Pa'amim. Says the Kaddish Baruch Hu, Shema twice a day? It's a little excessive, guys. If you think that my Torah is too much, and there's too much to review, and it's too much to get into, and I've learned this already, and it's the same idea, so it says the Kaddish Baruch Hu, okay, maybe I'll treat you the same way. The same vort is found in the Reshis Chachma, and it's found in the Shlav Nishar Osios, and it's found in the Igeres HaTiul of the brother of the Maharal. They all learn the Pasuk and Mishlei the same way. You have from Kabbalah to Misnagdim to Chassidus, all the Midrashim learning the same way. If you're Meisir Ozno, if you turn your ear away, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to turn to you in kind. The Al Shech HaKadosh, in the beginning of Parshas Vayelech, has the same vort again. But he has a beautiful twist on this vort. Listen to what he says. The Torah tells us at the beginning, by the mitzvah of Hakel, that all the Anashim should come, and they should come to Hakel to hear what's coming, what's going to be read to their ears. And then afterwards, the Torah says, Hakel Esa'am. All the Anashim are going to come to Yerushalayim to hear it, and then you're going to read it to the ears, and then afterwards, Hakel Esa'am, bring everyone together and gather them, Anashim, Vataf, all the women, the children, whoever it may be. So ask the Alshech, why does it flip it? It should say, gather everyone together, and then all the Anashim are going to open up the ears and hear. Why do we need to differentiate? Why are there two categories? Why are there Anashim, who should open up the ears, and then Hakel Asa'am, gather the nation of the children and the women and everybody else? So says the Alshech, what's a person going to say? I need to go hear some guy, some king, read to me Sefer Devarim. I'm a Baki in Kol HaTorah Kula. I've done Shas and Mishnayos, and I know Tanakh Bal Peh, I won the Chidon, I know everything. Everything's clear. Why do I have to review? Why should I go to Hakel? So this says the Alshech. Who do you think you are? A Kaddish Baruch who wants to read you the Torah? You want Hashem wants to teach you something? Anashim, you better go. The people who are Gvirim, people who think they know how to learn, people who know they know better, you better show up at Hakel, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu has something to tell you, and there's no shir that's beneath you. There's no divrei Torah that you should think that you are too good for. Everyone needs to show up to the shir, even anashim. Great people have to be there. And also, Hakel Sa'am, the taf and the nashim, and everybody else who might not know how to learn, they also have to come as well to hear what the Torah has to say. And therefore, they need special instructions. The Alshech goes a bit further, and it's appropriate for where we are right now. Says the Alshech HaKadosh. Where is this going on? This is going on in Sukkos, right? What is Sukkos? Sukkos is the end of everything. As the Sfas Emes writes, Sukkos is referred to as Chag HaAsif. It is the gathering of everything. It is the end of Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkos. It is the end of Pesach, Shavuos, Sukkos. Sukkos is it. It is the end of the holiday season. There is nothing else after it, and the calendar starts again. This is a lot of yontif we've been going through, and this is the culmination of everything. And therefore, what's a person going to say? I came to Yerushalayim on Pesach. I came to Yerushalayim on Shavuos. I came to Yerushalayim on Sukkos. Another one? Another thing to do in Yerushalayim? It's enough already. Says the Alshech, no. Yeah, Dafka, at the very end, we went through Elul, and we had Slichos, and we went through Rosh Hashanah, and it was a long davening, and we went through Aseret Meitshuvah, and there was a lot more Slichos, and there was Yom Kippur, and there was a lot more davening, and we sat in the Sukkah, and therefore we come to Simchas Torah, and we say, it's enough already. Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hakel Asa'am, you better get there on Sukkos, because it doesn't end. You review, you start again, you begin with Bereishis, and specifically by Sukkos we're told there's no end to reviewing. We're going to start the Torah again. We're going to do Bereishis. You're going to be Ma'avir Sedra again. You're going to do Chumash Rashi again. And you're going to do Gemara again. All from the beginning. We finish Rosh Hashanah. We're going to start Rosh Hashanah again. There's going to be more time to review, more Chazara, to get into it and show Hashem that you love the Torah, that you want every single word, and you're not going to close your ears from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah. Where did the Alshech get this idea that everyone has to go to the Shir, no matter if you're the Gadol Ador or even if you're a person who doesn't know anything? So in the Ketzah HaMatzah, the Ketzah HaMatzah is one of the Mefarshim in the Matzah Ephraim. The Matzah Ephraim is the classic work on the Yom Noraim. So the Matzah Ephraim writes in Tuf Reish Beis Sif Mem Aleph that everyone needs to go to the Shabbos Shuvah Drasha. Everyone is responsible to go. Whether you're Rosh Yeshiva or Rosh Kolel, whether you don't know anything, whether you know something, everyone is Chayev, says the Matzah Ephraim, to come to the Shabbos Shuvah Drasha. And therefore, says the Ketzah HaMatzah, who do we see this from? The Pasuk says, Hazinu HaShemayim V'adabera B'tishma HaAretz Imreifi. Hazinu HaShemayim, even those people are in the Shemayim, and they know a lot of Torah, they open up their ears. And know who else? Even the Aretz, those people who are on the ground are not as great. If the great people go, it will inspire those people on the ground to go as well. And then the Ketzah HaMatzah says the following thing. Do you know who the Darshan was in Sfas, in his generation? You know who the Darshan was? It was the Alshech. The Alshech was the Darshan in Sfas. You know who lived in Sfas with the Alshech? Rav Yosef Cairo, the Arizal. That was quite a good group. We are a very nice group tonight here. But it is not quite on that level. The Arizal, the Alshech, the Yosef Cairo, the Tomer Devor was at the same tkufa as well, Rav Chaim Vital, it was a pretty good shir, I can imagine. And you know what? Know who came to the Alshech Shabbos Shuvah Drasha? The Arizal. Know who else showed up? Rav Moshe Cordovero. Know who else showed up? Rav Beis Yosef. They all came to the Alshech. The Alshech was the Talmud of the Beis Yosef. The Beis Yosef of the Alshech Smicha. And know who came? His Rebbe came to his Shabbos Shuvah Drasha. I think we can all find the time to go to other people's Divrei Torah, to hear Torah from other people, if the Beis Yosef could get off his chair and go hear the Alshech's Shabbos Shuvah Drasha. So says the Ketzah HaMatzah. writes Rashi on the Pasuk in Dvarim, Kasher Anochi Mitzavcha Hayom, Lo Yubeinecha Kidyotigma Yeshena, Shein Adam Sofene Ela Kechadash Shako Ratzin Likrasa. Torah needs to be new to you every single time. It's not the same daf. It's not the same Mishnayos. It's not the same Mishnayos. I know it's a struggle to learn Mishnayos, but if Rabbi Akiva Eger wrote a special Gilyon commentary in his Mishnayos, if the Tosfos Yontif had the time to write a page on Mishnayos, he must have felt that learning Mishnayos was worth it. No? If the Bartanura wrote a Perish, he must have felt that reviewing Mishnayos was an important thing to do. Says the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that one of the ways of Kinyan Torah is Barichas Fasayim, that a person should elongate his, using one's mouth. Writes Rav Chaim Volozhiner that when a person reviews his Torah, even multiple times, each time you review and your Ma'avir Sedra and you do the Gemara and the Mishnayos, whatever it may be, you find a new thing each time, a new Nakuda, a new idea you weren't aware of beforehand. There's an amazing comment of the Chovos HaLevavos in the Shaar Cheshbon HaNefesh in Perek Gimel. In Perek Gimel, the Chovos HaLevavos lists a number of things that people should be careful about. And in Os Chaf Dal, you can look this up, in Os Chaf Dal, the Chovos HaLevavos says, extremely important idea for anyone who wants to be a Ben Torah and grow. And he says as follows. A person, when they learn Chumash or Mikra or whatever it is, when they were 5 years old or 7 years old or 10 years old, and they don't review it again when they get older, you will simply have the understanding of a 10-year-old when it comes to that item. When you learned Parshas Lech Lecha when you were 10, and you never learned Parshas Lech Lecha again as an adult, so essentially what you are is a 40-year-old man who understands Lech Lecha like a 10-year-old. That's essentially what you're holding. That's what it means, says the Chovos HaLevavos, that when you get older, you go back and you review again and again, because your understanding is deeper, it's better, it's sharper, and it's on a different level when you were there before. And therefore you need a cheshbon nefesh to review things. I learned Eilei Metzias when I was 12. Great. Will you understand like a 12-year-old? Are you happy with yourself now that you know Eilei Metzias like a 12-year-old? Of course not. You want to know it better and review to have a greater and deeper understanding. Rav Feiner likes to point out that the difference between a Talmud and someone who goes to a shir is that the Talmud of the person speaking doesn't care if the Rebbe repeats the same thing countless numbers of times. That's what it means to be a Talmud. That you hear it again and it's interesting, and you hear it again and it's interesting, and the fifth and the sixth time, it's just as interesting as before. The Misil Susharim says this again in his famous introduction. He says, I'm going to tell you things that are obvious and clear, but you know what? You need to review things again and again. I want to end with one more point. Before I get there, though, it's not just about reviewing 101 times. It's about seeing that it's important to your godless and growing. You need to see new things in your learning, and it should be exciting, and chas v'shalom to walk out of a shir when the person says, I'm going to teach something that you already know. No, you sit down, you pay attention, and you find something new again to grow from that. How do you get to that? It's one simple thing. If you love Torah, it'll be easier to do it. I want to end with one beautiful idea. Rav Pinkus writes in his Sichos on Sukkos as follows, that there's a minhag in many places on Simchas Torah that by the Hakavos, when you sing Moshe Emes v'Toraso Emes, the people jump up and down. They jump up and down. In my shul, we have a beautiful minhag that we throw the children in the air when we sing Moshe Emes v'Toraso Emes, this idea of jumping up and down. We catch them, but we also throw them in the air. So, says Rav Pinkus, where does this idea come from that we jump up and down when we sing Moshe Emes v'Toraso Emes? And he says, because if a person loves Torah and they love Torah Hashem, then you just have to jump. You're excited. You have every single piece of your body wants to jump and love Torah. What else are you going to do? You've sung, you've davened, you've danced. So all there is to do is to jump and to show Hashem that with every fiber of your being, you love Torah. And that's what it means, Moshe Emes, v'saraso Emes. And that's where the minhag comes from, he says, to jump when we sing in praise of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah and our great teacher, Moshe Rabbeinu. And if a person has such a love for Torah that every fiber of their being screams that they love it, and even if it's the same Rashi and the same Mishnais and the same Gemara, it'll be exciting, it'll be interesting, and it will make us into better Jews in our service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Thank you.
Before the last speaker, before Rabbi Shechtu begins, I just want to make a, and thank you very much, both Rabbi Trump and Rabbi Rice, for both outstanding presentations. I just want to make a quick pitch for Rabbi Rice was talking about developing an excitement in Torah and always being excited about what's next in learning Torah. Rabbi Trump certainly gave us a new perspective on something that we thought we knew or that we thought we understood and gave us a deeper understanding. So along those lines, we are going to be launching Be'ezras Hashem very soon. We already sort of did a soft launch of the next volume of Arat Zafon. The first volume was actually, Rabbi Schefter was our inaugural author in the first volume of Arat Zafon. For those who have written in the past, we're doing a new topic, Chanukah Purim. So even if you used all of your Torah on Yom Noraim and Pesach, so it's a new topic. And for those who haven't written in the past, you'll find it a very rewarding experience to be able to write up a piece of Torah that's worthy of sharing with other people. Baruch Hashem, the response has been very good so far, but we want the response to be even better than very good. Halavai, our biggest problem should be how to fit it all into a single volume. And I thank Dr. Grishko and Rabbi Balsam for taking the lead on the Arat Zafon. You can speak to them, and we'll be sending out a new link to a Google Doc that works. Yeah, so we'll be sending out a new link, Be'ezras Hashem, where you can sign up for real to write an article for the Arat Zafon as we continue to try to reach new heights in our Talmud Torah and in our Harbatzas HaTorah. As I mentioned before, no introductions, and certainly Rabbi Schefter does not need an introduction in our shul. Baruch Hashem, we've had the privilege of having him so many times, so we call upon Rabbi Schefter to conclude the program.
Good to luck, everybody. I feel extremely uncomfortable after hearing what Rabbi Rice just said about talking about the same thing over and over again. So we were discussing amongst ourselves on an email thread what we should all talk about this evening. So I wrote in that I was going to talk about an issue that was very similar to Rabbi Rice's topic, which I guess in retrospect would have been wonderful because then I just would have reviewed everything he said. So then I decided I should talk about something else, and then it was pointed out that I spoke about that last year, about having simcha when we learn Torah, which also would not have been a bad idea, because apparently reviewing is a very good thing. So I thought, now that I am enlightened, next year, if I'm invited back, we'll review the past 2 years. But for this evening, because I was not aware of that, for this evening, I thought maybe we'll speak about not simcha when we learn Torah, because that's what we spoke about in the past, but maybe to talk about simcha in general when we perform various mitzvahs throughout the year. So we'll begin with the following story. There's a story that's told in the Sefer, Uvdos Vahanhagos LeBeis Brisk. This is a, I don't know if it's a biography, but it's a lot of stories about the Brisker Rav and about different Rabbanim that he was familiar with, that he was friendly with. So there's a story there about the Chafetz Chaim. It's a very beautiful story. It's about a boy who came from Switzerland and went to learn in the Mir Yeshiva. So he left his family for a long extended period of time, and his father gave him a couple of whatever it was at the time, a couple of dollars, pennies, whatever. And he told him that when it's time for him to come home in a year from now, this is what he should use for the train, and he should make his way back home to Switzerland. That's what he did. He stayed. He enjoyed the yeshiva very much. And on his way home, he was trying to figure out the train schedule, and his person sitting next to him said, by the way, you know, we're going to pass through Radin on the way. Maybe you should make a pit stop in Radin so you can get out and get a bracha from the Chafetz Chaim. So it'll take you an extra day to get home. Why not? You'll catch the next train the next day. So he gets off in Radin, and he decides he's going to try to find the Chafetz Chaim. He gets off in Radin, and he sees it's freezing cold outside, and he doesn't know where he's going at all. So there's only two other people that got off with him. One of them has a long beard. So he turns to him, he says, are you from Radin? He says, yes. He says, who are you looking for? He says, well, the truth is I came to Radin. I'm on my way back to Switzerland. I really want to visit the Chafetz Chaim. He says, oh, my name is Zvi Levinson. Who's Zvi Levinson? They start to discuss a little bit. I'm the son-in-law of the Chafetz Chaim. So he says, the stop that we just got off in is not exactly next to Radin. We have to travel a couple of miles in order to get there, but the train doesn't stop there, so why don't we share a wagon together? We'll pay for the fare together. We'll get to the Chafetz Chaim. And he says, it's in the middle, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. You can't just show up in the Chafetz Chaim's house now. How about you stay in my house? I'll take care of you. I'll serve you breakfast tomorrow morning. I'll bring you to meet the Chafetz Chaim. So he was all excited. He gets to meet the son-in-law of the Chafetz Chaim. He's going to stay in his house, and now he has an inn. He's going to bring him to the Chafetz Chaim the next day. So he comes to the home of Rabbi Levinson, and it's obviously now after 3 in the morning. And Rabbi Levinson gives him a hot tea, and he gives him a bed, and he gives him a blanket, and he tries to take care of him. He warms up a little bit, and he's so exhausted from this trip. He's so drained. and he's totally expended. And finally, you know, Rabbi Levin says, "Is there anything else I can do for you?" He says, "You know, I'm just so worn out right now. I just need a bed. I need to go to sleep. Thank you. Tomorrow morning we'll talk." He tells him what time davening is. And then he reminds himself he forgot to daven Ma'ariv. But he says, "You know what? I'm just so cold. I finally got myself comfortable. Let me just sit a couple of minutes in bed. Let me warm up. And then I'll get, you know, I'll get out of bed. I'll go and daven." So as we know, that plan usually doesn't work. So this very nice boy also had the same problem that we all have, that he warmed himself up and he fell asleep and he wakes up the next morning, he forgot about the whole story. So he goes with Rabbi Levinson to the yeshiva, and Rabbi Tzvi Levinson brings him in, he gives him breakfast after davening, and he says, "Okay, now we're going to go to the Chafetz Chaim," and he's shuffling around in his pockets trying to find the papers that he got ready with all his questions from the Chafetz Chaim that he wants to ask him and all the etzes and everything. Anyway, he brings him to the Chafetz Chaim's house. They knock on the door, and the Chafetz Chaim welcomes this young boy in, and he says, "How can I help you?" The young boy is frozen. He doesn't know what to do with himself. The Chafetz Chaim says, "You know what? Before you talk, I have something I want to share with you." He says, "Okay." He says, "Achruni, I remember that many, many years ago, in the time of Bitkufas Hazar," he says, "in the time that one of the czars was in power in Russia," he says, "Lo haisa agura nechsheves leklum. When you had a little penny in your pocket that was a copper penny, it wasn't worth anything. And if you would drop it out of your pocket or you saw someone else drop it, you wouldn't even pay attention. Everyone would trample on it. Everyone would walk over it. Everyone would just ignore it." And he says, "That's because we had so much gold and so much silver. We had so much plenty in those years. So who would pay attention to a penny? It doesn't mean anything to us. You can't even do anything with it. We don't need that." He says, "Nowadays," the Chafetz Chaim says, "when we're living in a time when it's bitkufas rav amachzer, we're living in a time of famine, of destitution, a time when nobody has anything. If you would see a penny drop out of somebody's pocket, if you would see a penny drop out of your own pocket, if you would walk by it on the street, you would never walk by it. You would pick it up the moment you see it. You wouldn't let it go." And the Chafetz Chaim starts to bemoan the fact that we don't live in those wonderful days anymore. We don't live in those years of plenty. This boy is sitting there. Can't really understand why the Chafetz Chaim is giving him a history lesson about what life was like in the olden days in Russia and what it's like now. And he doesn't really know how to approach the Chafetz Chaim and ask him, "Why are you sharing this with me?" And finally the Chafetz Chaim tells him, "You know, the reason I'm saying this," he says, "is because it used to be also that we had generations of tzaddikim, we had generations of Talmidei Chachamim, we had generations of incredible people. So if you missed a Ma'ariv one night, it wasn't such a big deal, because the world was filled with all these unbelievable people who were doing such amazing things. But now that we live in a generation like ours, and now that we're stuck with the great people like myself, and that's it," the Chafetz Chaim says, "every little Ma'ariv makes a big difference. Every little Ma'ariv counts. Every little penny makes a difference, because now we're living in a time of famine." And with that, the Chafetz Chaim closed his words. This boy did not know what to do with himself. He realized the Chafetz Chaim had an absolutely incredible Ruach HaKodesh, undeniable, to understand what had happened the night before. And he understood that the Chafetz Chaim was teaching him that in our generation, every mitzvah that a person does enhances the world in a very significant way. Every small act that we are involved in raises up the level of our generation, because we live in a generation where we certainly don't have people the likes of the Chafetz Chaim. If the Chafetz Chaim was bemoaning the fact that he didn't have any longer people like he remembered having, we certainly are not on a level that compares even slightly to the Chafetz Chaim's Madrega and to the people that were alive in his time. And what you learn from this is that even the simplest of acts, even the smallest engagement or involvement in a mitzvah, is something that is so extremely significant. As simple as it might be, does God really need my Ma'ariv? Does God really care if I make Zman Kriya Shema? Does he care if I really have kavana when I say the Berachas HaMazon after I wash? Does he care if I really sit in the sukkah? Okay, tonight, it's cold outside, I'm really going to sit in there? Does he care? And the answer is, in previous generations, maybe it didn't make such a difference. But in generations like ours, the Chafetz Chaim teaches, it's incredibly significant, it's extremely important. And this is something that the Chafetz Chaim is not the only one who expressed. This is something that's expressed by many others as well. Chavos HaLevavos talks about it, and the Pele Yoetz writes from the Arizal, that also this is an idea that we have a common refrain in Jewish Hashkafa. It's in Jewish philosophy, we talk about it a lot, that in generations like ours, it's an opportunity for all of us to really shine. It's an opportunity for us to really raise the level of spirituality in the world. So the Sefer Akuzari writes, Rabbi Yehuda Alevi in the 1100s, Right, it's an amazing concept. He says, "Kololo shel davar." The bottom line is, when you do a mitzvah, that Torah seinu nechalekas bein hayira v'ha'ava v'ha'simcha. The Torah can be divided into three categories. There's yira, there's ahava, and there's simcha. Tiskariv el elokecha b'chol achas me'ela. You have the right to relate and to connect with the Ribbono shel Olam in any of these ways. Some people choose to connect with yira. Some people choose to connect with Ava, and others choose to connect with Simcha. And don't you dare look down on the person who connects in one of these three ways, because it's not your way of connecting. Says the Sefer Akuzari, because Ein kniyascha b'demei hatainis yoser krova el ha'elokim. Don't think that just because you're sitting in pain and discomfort and tanius all day long, and you're on a tanis dibra and you're not talking to anybody, don't think that you are any closer to God. Don't think that makes you any closer to Him than the way that you connect to Him on Yom Tov when you enjoy yourself and you're not sitting in a tinus. Meaning the same level, says the Sefer HaKuzari, that we all elevated ourselves to on a Yom Kippur when we thought, now we're really painting ourselves for God, this must make us really close to Him. That's the same connection, it's the same relationship that we can create when we're enjoying a good steak in the sukkah on Sukkot. It's the same thing. Because there are three avenues that we can connect with the Ribbono shel Olam in everything that we do. We can connect through Ava, we can connect through Yira, and we can connect through Simcha. Kishatia Simchascha b'kavana uvelev shalem, he says, provided that it's going to be a sincere and a genuine Simcha, not just a holulus, not just that you want to enjoy yourself, but that you really want to sincerely enjoy the mitzvah that you're involved in. And he writes, Kimosha atachanunim tzrichim machshava v'kavana, the same way that when I supplicate myself, when I dive into Hashem, I need to have specific intent, kavana, to understand what I'm saying, to present my case before Him. Well, that's the same. Kein hasimcha b'mitzvaso v'taroso tzrichim machshava v'kavana. So too, when I'm enjoying the experience of a mitzvah, I have to direct my thoughts and understand, what is it that I'm enjoying? Why am I enjoying myself? What am I doing at this moment, and am I really connecting with God? Don't think that that's not something that needs thought. Just because you're enjoying yourself doesn't mean you're going to enjoy for the right reasons. But enjoying a mitzvah is something that is very easy for all of us to relate to. I would imagine that to relate to the aspect of connecting with Hashem through Yira Shamayim is not so easy. Only through Yira. But to connect to the Ribbono Shel Olam through Simchas HaMitzvos is something that I think is a little bit easier for us to connect to. There's an incredible, absolutely incredible story told about one of the greatest Talmidim of the Baal Shem Tov, Reb Meir Primishlana. The Reb Zevin writes a story in Sipuri Hasidim. It's an absolutely amazing story that one year on Simchas Torah, Reb Meir Primishlana was dancing with all the Hasidim in the shul, and somebody ran in and told him, "We think you should go home. Your daughter is on her deathbed. She has some serious illness. She's been sick for a while, but now it's really the end." So Meir Primishlana didn't know what to do. Here he is dancing hakafas, and he's with all the chassidim, and he doesn't know what's he supposed to be feeling at this time. So he leaves the hakafas, he goes home, and he says the following. Ribbono shel Olam, Tzivisa litkoa b'shofar b'Rosh Hashanah, Meir el taka. You asked that I should blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, I did what I was supposed to do. Tzivisa lihisanas b'yom kippurim. You asked, you instructed us to fast on Yom Kippur, Meir el hisanah. I did, like a faithful servant, like a faithful son, I did what you asked me to do. I fasted on Yom Kippur. I did all the Yinuyim exactly as I was supposed to. Tzivisa leishe basukkah, you asked me to sit the entire duration of Sukkot inside of a sukkah. You asked me to shake my lulav. I did all of that. Tzivisa lesmach besimchas Torah. Now you instructed me that I should have simcha, I should rejoice, I should celebrate on Simchas Torah. Meir osameach. Here I am, I'm doing my best to enjoy myself and to have a complete Simchas HaTorah. Hine asisa es bito shomer ucholanis. Now you made my daughter sick. And my mitzvah now is to be mekabel that besimcha also. But what am I supposed to do? Ein ma'arvin simcha besimcha. Ein ma'arvin simcha besimcha. So you're giving me two mitzvah opportunities, both of them that I'm supposed to be excited about. One is a natural excitement, one I have to work on a little bit more. But these are very conflicting feelings of simcha. and I don't know what you want me to feel right now. How about hold off on the other mitzvah till tomorrow? This way I can really accept both mitzvah experiences with the proper simcha that I'm supposed to be feeling. So again, that's a madrega that we can't even dream of. But it gives us a perspective of how tzaddikim in previous generations approached every mitzvah that they came across. Every commandment. Every time they had an opportunity to connect with God was an incredible simcha, even if it's something that was naturally difficult for them. Losing a child is not something simple for anyone. But it's something that's a time to connect with the Ribbono Shel Olam and to be b'simcha as well. Tzarech l'kabuli b'simcha. So the Rambam already tells us that this is not such an easy thing to do. The Rambam writes in Hilchas Lulav, Ha-simcha she-yismach ha-adam ma'asiyas ha-mitzvah. The enjoyment, the excitement that we're supposed to feel when we perform a mitzvah, u'ba'avas ha-kel sha-tziva b'hem avodah gedolah hi. That's a very difficult task. It's something that doesn't come easily for us. V'chalamoneah atzmo b'simcha zu, ray lihipara mimenu, says the Rambam. Someone who feels that they should perform mitzvahs without being excited about it, he says, that's something that God is going to have a question to you. Why weren't you excited when you did my mitzvahs? Why were you so callous? Why were you so apathetic? It didn't excite you at all? About the fact that you have the opportunity to sit in the sukkah, to shake the lulav, to dance Simchas Torah, nothing about that excited you? That says the Rambam, Tachas Asher Lo Avadatos Hashem Elokecha B'Simcha V'Tuv Leivav. It's something we're going to be held accountable for. So I saw a comment of Reb Shlomo Volvo where he writes in the Alei Shor that the truth is, you have to ask yourself, why should we feel simcha at that time? What is so exciting about the fact that I'm shaking a lulav? What is so exciting about the fact that I'm learning Torah? What is so exciting about the fact that I'm sitting in a sukkah? Very basic question. But what is the nature of this simcha that I'm supposed to be feeling and where does it come from? So Rav Volba writes so beautifully, he says that very often in life we have opposites. We have things that contradict each other. So he says you have ish v'isha. A man and a woman are very different personalities, but yet when they figure out how to join together those two opposite, sometimes opposite personalities or two very different kinds of approaches to life, that creates the greatest simcha. When you bring two opposites together and they figure out how to coalesce, how to unite and become one, there's no greater simcha than that. That's why a good marriage is the greatest bracha, is the greatest gift. And he says the same is a neshama and a guf. When you have a healthy person, that their neshama and their guf is working in tandem, there's no greater simcha than that. And shamayim va'aretz. There's no greater celebration than to have the heaven and earth all doing what they're supposed to do. Yismachu ha-shamayim v'sagei la'aretz. Why? Because everybody's doing exactly what it's supposed to do. Shir la'ashem shir chadash. Shir la'ashem kal ha'aretz. When you have the whole world, shamayim and aretz, all doing exactly what they're supposed to do, although they are opposites, that evokes the greatest expressions of simcha. And so too here he says, when we have the opportunity to perform a mitzvah, that is the opportunity of shamayim va'aretz coming together. That's the opportunity of two actual opposites figuring out how to coalesce, how to unite with one another. What greater simcha can there be than that? That's like celebrating an anniversary every moment of our lives, when we realize that our marriage to God is something that's really significant. We realize that we are the opposite of God in some way. We are not living godly lives our whole life. It's not something we're not capable of doing that. We're living on this earth. And yet, we can figure out how to stick the godliness into everything that we do and to marriage, to unite them together and to make sure that they stay together and that there's that union, there's a fusion that really works. That's the reason why we're supposed to be misameach every time we do a mitzvah, because we're uniting two opposite forces that naturally have no business being together at all. One of the Rebbes, one of the Chassidish Rebbes commented, I forgot who it was, but he said, this is the pshat that we say, Yismach Lev Mevakshei Hashem. That he said, when you have a person who tries to seek out something that they lost, let's say you lose your credit card and you're looking all over the place frantically, you're trying to call every store that you went to, you can't remember, where did I leave it, one of the counters again. You're frantically looking for something, you're not excited until you find it, until you get to the end. But Yismach Lev Mevakshei Hashem. What's unique about our relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam is we're excited about the fact that we're looking for Him, even though we haven't yet come to the complete understanding, even though we haven't come to the goal yet, we haven't completely found Him. But just the Bikush HaEmes, looking, the searching out, the process of calling every store to find where that credit card is. Every mitzvah that we do in our lives gives us simcha, even though we're not yet at the goal. Because just the seeking out, just that opportunity to try and find the Ribbono Shel Olam in our lives, and to connect with Him at those moments, is a reason in and of itself to be misameach. Is a reason in and of itself to have a tremendous celebration. And this is what the Midrashim write. Why was it that Yeshayahu ben Amoz, why was it fair that he was the Navi that was blessed to be able to give all the Nachamas to the Jewish people? He gave so many wonderful prophecies. He gave so many things to the Jewish people that other Nevi'im weren't able to prophesize. What was so special about him? He was so much more chashev than all the rest of them. Says the Tana of Eliyahu, which is a pretty credible source, no one greater than Eliyahu HaNavi. So the Tana of Eliyahu writes, the reason why is because, very simply, Amarti lo b'ni, mipnei shehu haya mekabel alav ol malchus shamayim b'simcha, yoser mishar kol hanavim. Since Yeshayahu had a perspective of simcha in every act of a mitzvah that he did, more so than anyone else, God paid him back and said, you're going to be the one who's going to be blessed to give the Jewish people all of the nechamas, to give the Jewish people all of the prophecies of nechama that they so richly deserve, that they so much want. And it's all because you had that perspective of being so overjoyed, of being so overexcited every time you involved yourself, you engaged yourself in the performance of a mitzvah. We have a Gemara. The Gemara tells us in Masechah Shabbos, when the Gemara is talking about in the beginning of Masechah Shabbos, when the Gemara discusses the Isser of Mavir Dalet Amos B'Shus HaRavim, so the Gemara has a whole discussion there about when a person would violate the Avera of Havara on Shabbos, carrying something outside on Shabbos. So the Gemara says in the context of that discussion that Benazai is of the opinion that Mahalech Ka'ome Dami, which is a very surprising statement, but Benazai is of the opinion every time you walk, every step that you take, you can never violate the Avera because every time you take a step, you're just stopping your motion and there's never a Havara that occurs at all. So Tosis there quotes the Yerushalmi, where he asked the following kasha. If it's true that Mavir Dalet Amos B'Shus HaRabim is, in fact, a malacha, how does Ben Azai ever dream up of a case of when a person could be chayav for Havar B'Shus HaRabim? How do you ever come up with a case when a person carries something for Amos and he's going to be chayav for Havar on Shabbos? What have I done? Every step that I take, I'm stopping the act that I'm doing. Ben Azai is of the opinion that every time you take a step, it's all over. So how does he understand the malacha of Mavir Dalet Amos B'Shus HaRabim? Tosis says the answer is in the name of the Yerushalmi. Mishkachas Lavakofetz. We're talking about a case where he jumps Dalet Amos. So if you stand here and you jump four Amos with something in your hands, then you're going to be in violation of Mavir Dalet Amos B'Shus HaRabim. So the story goes that Rabbi Kiva Eger was once learning with his grandson. Rabbi Leibel Eger was Rabbi Kiva Eger's great chagrin. He became a Chassidish Rebbe, although Rabbi Kiva Eger was not happy about that at all. But he was learning with his young grandson, Rabbi Leibel Eger. They got up to this Gemara. And Rabbi Leibel Eger was asked the following question by his grandfather. So Tosus writes, according to Ben Azai, the only time you can violate a malacha of Havara on Shabbos, of Mavir, Dalet Amos, B'Shus HaRabim, is when you're kofetz, when you jump Dalet Amos. Now, how many of us can jump Dalet Amos? Dalet Amos is about 8 feet, something like that, close, 7 feet. How many people can jump 7 feet holding something in their hands? It's very unlikely. So he asked the following. We know we have a gzeira that we don't carry the lulav, we don't shake lulav on Shabbos. Why? Shema yaviranu Dalet Amos B'Shus HaRabim. We're nervous. Maybe someone's going to carry a Dalet Amos outside in the B'Shus HaRabim. They're going to violate a malacha d'arais. We don't do all kinds of mitzvahs. We don't have the shofar on Shabbos. We don't lay in the Megillah on Shabbos. Shema yaviranu Dalet Amos. Esther B'Kiv Eger to his grandson, what's the probability? What's the likelihood? Someone's going to carry a Megillah and a lulav and the shofar and jump 8 feet without... What are you, crazy? What's the likelihood of that happening? So someone's going to do it one time in the history of the world. We don't make gzeira for one person who's going to do it. We make gzeira if it's something that's shchicha. We make gzeira if it's something that's likely. So why they make a takana, why they make gzeira that we're not allowed to carry, that we're not allowed to blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, Shachalias B'Shabbos? Why they make a takana that we're not allowed to shake the lulav when Sukkot falls out on Shabbos? What's the probability, what's the likelihood of somebody jumping four amas with the lulav? So Rabbi Leibel Eger, the Chassidish Rebbe, gave the answers. What's the likelihood? Who wouldn't be jumping eight amas with their lulav and esrog when they're about to go to shul and shake it? Of course it's likely. Think Chazal would make such a gzera? Who is not going to jump with the lulav and esrog and the shofar and the megillah when you're on your way to perform the mitzvah? What else are you going to do? You're going to walk to shul slowly? Everybody's flying through the streets. So Rabbi David Mandelbaum, the Pardes Yosef, pointed out to me once that perhaps He said the Gera Rebbe pointed out that maybe this is Ben Azai the Shitaso, because Ben Azai is the one who says Mahalech Ka'omei Dami, and that's where the whole discussion starts there in Masechet Shabbos. Ben Azai is the one who says Have a Ratz the Mitzvah Kala Kabachamura. So Ben Azai himself is the one who feels that this is the perspective we all have when we perform a mitzvah. What else would we do? How else would we approach a mitzvah opportunity other than to jump 8 amos to get ourselves closer to that mitzvah? What else would we do? And that said, the Ger Rebbe is why Ben Azai here feels this is legitimate, this makes sense. It's a reason to make a gzeira, because this is something that any normal Jew would do. This is something that anybody who has a pulse, anybody who cares about a mitzvah would probably be doing. Like the Shulchan Aruch says, L'olam yarod sadam, a person should run to shul. Not just walk leisurely into shul, you run to shul. And the Shulchan Aruch even says, even if it's Shabbos, and on Shabbos you're not allowed to do so. And the Gemara says, even though you're not allowed to be mafsiya psiya gasa, even though you're not allowed to take big steps, it's considered not sanua, it's considered gasa zruach, whatever, when it comes to doing a mitzvah, you're supposed to do so. Because that's the perspective we're supposed to have. That's the feeling everyone is supposed to have when they approach the various mitzvah opportunities that they have in their lives. This is supposed to be over at 10 o'clock? Okay, so we'll wrap it up. Let's just close with a beautiful insight. The Gemara has in Baba Kama, the Gemara there says that Matbea Shel Avram Avinu, the coins that were minted in the time of Avram Avinu, were Zakin Uzakena Mitzad Echad, Bacharu Besula Mitzad Sheni. And there's a machlokas that we showed him exactly what are we talking about. Who was on both sides? It says there was an elderly couple on one side and a younger couple on the other side. So some Rishonim say it was Avram and Sarah on one side and Yitzchak and Rivka on the other side. But others suggest that no. Perhaps it was Avram Avinu on both sides. It was Avram Avinu and his wife Sarah as a young couple. And it was Avram Avinu and Sarah as an older couple in their old age. And the significance of that, some suggest, is because even when a person feels, like Rabbi Rice said, I've done this mitzvah 100 times, it's not so exciting. How many times did Avraham Avinu go and convince somebody there's a God in the world? How many times did he sit down and try to be Makarv another Jew? At what point did he say, okay, enough of the Kiruv movement, time to move on and do something else with my life? Who's interested in doing this anymore? He was a Zakin Uzakena Mitzad Echad. He was an old man. The only one who has a yeshiva, the only one who's running a Kiruv organization, the only one who's trying his best to influence the world. Avraham Avinu gets to a point in his life where he's a Zakein, his wife is a Zkena, they're worn out, enough doing this mitzvah, enough! But he always reminded himself that Mitzad Sheni, it's Bacharu Basula at the same time. We always have those young, energetic powers inside of ourselves to remind ourselves that we can always reinvigorate that passion, we could always light ourselves on that fire again, to want to do that very same mitzvah with the same excitement, and not only with the same excitement, but with more excitement. Because we know that it will bring about only the greatest good. Sukkot, as we know, is the Zman Simchasenu. It's a time when we have the opportunity to have such enthusiasm, never to allow ourselves to be lethargic, never to allow ourselves to have a callous or apathetic attitude to our observance of mitzvahs. It's the time when we have such an overjoyous expression throughout the entire experience of Yom Tov. This is the time that we ask the Ribbono Shel Olam, when he sees our simcha, we ask him, Ufros Aleinu Sukkah Shlomecha, that he brings us to the time when we have the ultimate state of simcha, which is going to be with the Binyan Bayis HaShlishi, Uvduya Hashem, Yeshuva Nuvalu Tziyam Berina, that we should have that opportunity to have the ultimate sason and simcha, not only in the mitzvah experiences that we have in Galus, not only in the opportunities that God so beautifully, so wonderfully gives us here in Olam Hazeh, but also to have that ultimate expression, Uvalu Tziyam Berina, that God should take us all to Yerushalayim Yer HaKodesh with Simchas Olam HaRosham, that we should have that ultimate celebration together in Yerushalayim with the Binyan Bayis HaShlishi. I wish everyone a good Tevach and a good Mlad.
Thank everyone for coming, and again, thank all the outstanding speakers for really tremendous, tremendous Torah this evening. And again, thank you to the Shlafak family, the Zecher Nishmas, Binyamin Ben Shamshin. So, Ben Shamshin Aliyah, and we thank everyone very much for coming. A good Tevach, a good Moed to everybody.